You are Locked On Syracuse, your daily podcast on the Syracuse Orange, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Oh, baby, that was an ugly one over the weekend. This is the Locked On Syracuse podcast. We're breaking down SU's 96-76 loss to Pitt from over the weekend. Be sure to check out the show wherever you get your podcast. And also, you can find us on Twitter at @LO_Syracuse. Subscribe to the show if you're new. And also, today's episode brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use our promo code LOCKEDON and you will get 20% off your next order. All right, Tyler Rocky alongside Justin Champagne. Oh, wait, no. Justin Champagne just out of nowhere. I mean, what was happening in this game? You kind of felt doomed from the start. Tim Leonard is with me, by the way. But this is that was kind of the tale of how everything went in this game. It was just bad news after bad news. And it kept compounding itself in this game. And obviously the Champagne stuff, he goes out and really a non-factor in the first half and then explodes in the second half, finishes the game with 24 points, 16 rebounds in a return. Wasn't this injury supposed to be like 6 to 8 weeks? And I think he chopped that down to like 4 or something like that. But a big get for Pitt to have him back. And I mean, this Pitt team is now 3-1 in the ACC. Two of those wins coming against Syracuse. Meanwhile, the Orange drops to 1-3 in the ACC right now, trending way, way down. They're all the way down to 51 on KenPom, and a lot of Orange fans really disappointed, especially with how this game played out defensively.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the one thing I agreed with from Jim Boeheim's press conference was when he basically said, yeah, there's no reason to talk about the offense right now. This is on the defense. And then he made the claim that this is the worst defense he's seen in his 45 years as the head coach at Syracuse. So, yeah, I wish I was Justin Champagne. That'd be nice because I've never seen a player.
Might be getting a hefty check in your future.
Yeah, I mean, God, he just completely took over that game. And Pitt was smart the way they used him. They kept flashing him baseline, but that was just a dunk party from him. And, you know, there's actually something that, this is kind of twisting the knife, but there's actually something that Justin Champagne and I have in common. We both had Syracuse as our dream school at one point.
Oh,
I
boy.
I mean, gosh.
You know,
like,
I'm so done with this narrative that we hear. We get it like once a year. And it's not just Syracuse. It's every school. But there's always the one guy who has the dream school. Like, we saw it, with Kevin Herter, too? And then Maryland goes out and he puts up a game and a half against Syracuse. You always hear that. And it's with every school. Like, even with Illinois over the weekend. You heard it with E.J. Liddell, who was from the Central
right.
Illinois region, and then he goes out and puts up a career high against Illinois. So it's one of those things, like, it's going to come up, and it don't get mad. It's not like a get mad sort of thing. Like, who was the other guy? I'm blanking on the name of the person right now whose dream school was Syracuse, and then he would always light up the Orange. It was from, like, a year or two ago. But he was a... I can't remember the name exactly, but...
Well, Jordan Wara was kind of like that a little bit.
Jordan Wara, yes. That was one of them. But yeah, no, it's just one of those things. Like, I'm not going to get mad. If you've got a little extra motivation, good for you.
Yeah, the thing about Justin Champagne, great player, tremendous player. And I do think Pitt played well in this game to an extent. I mean, they had to score freaking 64 points in one half. I can't get over that number. Every time I read it,
no.
Every time I see it.
I mean, this is a Syracuse team that not too long ago was allowing less than 64 points in a game. Like, you were winning tournament games, holding teams under 64 points.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, it's just baffling because going into the season, I had higher hopes about this team than most because I figured, okay, it was a down year last year in the zone, but you're bringing back a lot of what you had in the 2-3 zone last year, so you don't really have to worry about the new pieces gelling. And quite frankly, the new pieces have been the best part of the zone. Maybe not Alan Griffin, but you think about like the way Woody Newton and Kadari have played. They're statistically our best defenders right now, and Robert Braswell doesn't have a ton of zone experience in games, but he's looked great when he's been out there defensively at least. So that's a whole separate thing, but that was my whole argument for why they could be better this year is historically the zone works. Historically, it's a good defense, and Boeheim usually has defensive-minded teams, so they can just get a little bit better, and their numbers are better. This game, maybe it'll prove to be more of an outlier than we are thinking right now, but this is two straight years of watching teams just shoot over top of the zone, watching teams get it to the high post easily, And then the backdoor lob stuff, when you've got Dolezal back there and not Sidibe, it's a big deal that you don't have Sidibe. But at the end of the day, it's not just one position. It's the entire zone is out
of
sync.
It's five positions.
Yeah. And
that's the
bad
thing is, we call this thing a 2-3 zone. It's really not. It's a 1-1-1-1-1 zone right now, because the way that a lot of these teams have just moved this zone around and shuffled it, and it's just the quick passes around the perimeter. There is, we've kind of seen the blueprint this year, and this team is out of sorts. They don't have quite the length at the top that they're used to having. When we saw, like, I always point back to the length that they would have whenever they had Frank Howard or Michael Benajay or Trevor Cooney. They don't have that really right now. When you put Joe Girard out there, now when Kadari's out there, you do, but it's one of those things where there's always a limitation to the zone out there when you've got Joe Girard. And here's another big problem is that these guys don't have their hands up, whether it's shot contests, whether it's just you're stationary. Like, that is principle number one of the zone, is you need your arms out, because that's what allows a zone defense to work. And if you just watch these guys, and I'm not singling out Joe and Buddy in that. It's even Kadari. Kadari needs his arms up. And I know that he plays the zone better than most on this team, but even he is guilty of this. Alan Griffin's guilty of this. Quincy, Marek, everyone. It goes top to bottom. Braswell, Woody Newton. Everyone is guilty of this. And it should be the simplest thing. Get your arms up and out. That is like a third grade basketball concept.
The scary part is Buddy and Joe, I just don't really see a solution to where they are the answer at the top of the 2-3 zone. Or we get to a point where this team...
Well, you know how they're the answer? Let me give you the answer. You can't shoot 0 for 11 from 3 combined.
Well, yeah, but...
Like,
sure.
Plain and simple.
I'm talking defensively.
Like, I get what you're saying. Defensively, yeah. But the only way to supplement for your deficiencies on defense are by making up for it on offense. And, like, they're not going to get better to the point where they are not liabilities at the top of the zone this season. It's just not going to happen this year.
Right, so then you've got to make changes. And that's the part that bothers me about Jim Boeheim's press conference. And I'm sure it bothers the entire fan base when he was asked the question, how do you improve the defense? And he blankly looked into the camera and said, we have no answers. I don't care if that's deep down how you feel. Like, maybe coaches get to that point. Maybe there's times where coaches are like, yeah, like, this is going to be a long season. But you never come out and say that, because you know what? That just doesn't inspire confidence in the locker room. If a player hears their coach say, yeah, we don't have any answers, it's going to be like this all year, we're going to struggle. Like he said last year when they struggled in Barclays, he came out and said, we're going to struggle all year. It's going to be a challenge for us to rebound all year long. And it was, and maybe you can say, oh, at least he's being honest. Like, there's good and bad there. I just think that was too honest from Boeheim. Even if you feel that way, you have to at least fake it and show some confidence, show some willingness to fight. And that's the other thing about this team. There's not a whole lot of fight in these guys right now. Like, it just doesn't inspire confidence. I'm not going to attack their effort. I think they bring good effort, but it just does feel like there's a lot of slumped shoulders and a lot of hung heads. There's not a whole lot of like, all right, let's come back from this run and let's stick it to them. And maybe it's just easier said than done, and it's really hard to do that the way they're playing defensively. But I just want our coach to come out and not basically admit defeat at the podium after a game like this.
All right, real quick, Packers, Bucks, Chiefs, Bills, it doesn't get much better than that. We've got the conference championship slate all set for you here. And guess what? There's only one place that has you covered and one place that we trust to get all those wagers in. It's betonline.ag. Right now, you can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use our promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus. That means if you throw $100 into your account, you're going to get $50 on the house. So go right now, betonline.ag, sign up for that free account. There's so many games on right now, and you can get in on all the action with a little wager here and there by going to betonline.ag. We're going to be previewing this Miami game tomorrow. Get a little Syracuse-Miami bet on in. You like the over, you like the under, you like Syracuse with the points, or if you've been watching the Syracuse team and you don't like what you've been seeing, then maybe lay a little on Miami because they've been playing all right now. So get in on the action. Go to betonline.ag, full slate of NFL, full slate of NBA, NHL, college basketball, whatever sport you want, they've got it. And they've got props, totals, all that good stuff. So get in on the action. Don't sit on those sidelines anymore. Use our promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Go to betonline.ag. Use our promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get that 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. What's interesting, too, and you bring up the whole fight part of it, is they had plenty of fight against UNC.
Yeah.
And we're not too far removed from that game. That game was all fight. And I think that's part of the frustrating nature of what this season has become, is you have played some really tough games that the end result does not look very good. Look back to that Rutgers game. I would say Syracuse, given the circumstances especially, played a pretty good game. UNC, you showed a lot of fight. I mean, you made a couple comebacks from down double digits and took some leads. That's a lot of fight in you right there. Maybe you didn't close it out, but that was a lot of fight. And now it's these games like the Pit. It's the playing to the competition. And it just kind of boggles your mind how this is the same team that is hanging with ranked teams, is fighting through adversity. Like, Syracuse knew they weren't going to win the rebounding battle against UNC. They knew. But they still found other ways to make that game competitive. You knew in this game with Justin Champagne, you probably weren't going to win the rebounding battle. You also knew that with the way that they were shooting, you're going to probably have to lock down defensively, try to do some things that were quote-unquote out of your comfort zone. And they just couldn't do it. And they didn't even show really an interest in it. And you bring up the whole hanging heads thing. I will say this. It's better to see hanging heads than guys that don't care. Because I think these guys do care.
Sure.
And this isn't a season that is lost this early. So I think that is one of the positives to take away. But if it starts to snowball, that's when those hanging heads turn into blank stares that don't care going back to the bench.
I'm just tired of seeing, like, when the news came out before the game that Justin Champagne is playing, it's like DEFCON 0. I mean, it proved out to be that way, but it's so sad that we've come to this as a program. Justin Champagne, like I said, great player, but he's 6'6". I mean, the fact that he's getting 16 rebounds on you and dunking all over the entire team, and it just feels like they're designing their entire playbook for him, and every single play is running through him. Like, I've never seen a player just single-handedly dominate a half like Justin Champagne did. Now, it was almost like he was Shaq out there or something. Like, he was just so physically imposing. But
yeah, 6'6 Shaq. I mean, yeah, what the hell is that?
It's not even just him, though. Like, we saw the Buffalo guy do it to us, so I'm forgetting his name.
Well, I'll say this, too. You bring up Justin Champagne, and yeah, he was an electrifying rebounder in this game. He had 6 offensive boards. I'd argue the offensive boards from Audis Toney hurt you more. Like, sure. How many times did you see him just come in kind of uncontested and then, boom, gather and go straight back up? It was frustrating, and I feel like the offensive boards, he had 4 of them in this game. I feel like those ones kind of stung a little more.
And I understand he's not your typical 6'6 player for anyone. Like, I know he leads the ACC in rebounding. I get that it was a huge matchup nightmare. It just feels like it doesn't take a ton to be completely overwhelming against the 2-3 zone right now. If you just have some semblance of size and some semblance of talent, then you're going to be able to score and rebound at will against this zone. And it's just sad that it's come to this. And honestly, Ty, I think this was the one that really stung the most, because it just felt like there's no way ever that this team should be swept by Pitt. Like, as much as the recruiting has dipped and the talent is not what it used to be, they're just a better basketball team personnel-wise than Pittsburgh is. And it felt like they were out-coached. It felt like they didn't make adjustments. And here they are, 1-3 in ACC play. For the third time in the last 4 years, they've started the season 1-3 in ACC play. And let's keep in mind, it's not like they had some gauntlet to start the season. It was BC,
yeah.
UNC in a down year, in a game they could have won despite being out-rebounded by 17, and then Pitt and Pitt in between that UNC game. Like, they should have been 3-1 at this point in ACC play, and that isn't even asking a ton. That's just asking them to be adequate or slightly above average. And now you look at where we are. I mean, I saw tweets today. We're 8 weeks, as of us recording on Sunday night, away from Selection Sunday. Like, they're outside of the bubble firmly right now. They need a lot of help. They're 61 in the net. They're 51 in KenPom. And they played, what, 4 games against Quad 1 and Quad 2? And they're 0-4 in those games. And even when you think back to the games that they have won, they're against bad teams, and they took them down to the wire, like Northeastern. And as much as we acknowledge that Buffalo is a more talented team than maybe their record indicates, you still had to go to overtime to beat a Buffalo team who's outside top 100 in the net, and that's your best to win right now in this, at this point in the season.
And I think the most frustrating part of these Pitt games has been that Syracuse has looked like the better team in both games. And that's the frustrating part, is they have played well in first halves, and they have looked like the better team in each of those
first
halves.
Yeah, Pitt has spotted them comes crumbling both down. Times.
Yeah, like, no, absolutely.
They scored 95 points in 33 minutes in this game. They scored a point in the first 7 minutes, and they finished with 96. I mean, that's... I don't even know how you let that happen. It was literally like 85% of possessions the rest of the way they scored the basketball. It's just... it's like, how does a 2-3 zone get that bad? And I know it's one game, and it's easy to overreact, and there's a lot of time left, and they've got Miami Tuesday, which hopefully can be a game that you can bounce back. But the way the defense is playing, that's the bottom line here. You can talk about Joe shooting. You can talk about Buddy struggling. I hear you on all of that. Like, Alan Griffin's turnovers. Everything offensively is not great, besides Quincy, which you just feel bad for Quincy at this point. But it's the defense. Like, they have to get better defensively, and they have to show something, or else they're going to have to start putting out lineups that are just designed to try to limit teams offensively. Because it's not like Pitt is some juggernaut or some team that should be really skilled against the 2-3 zone. They don't have that many shooters. And I'll give them credit. They worked the ball around. They passed it well. It felt like for the first time really since they've met in the ACC, Pitt has kind of figured out this zone. Usually Syracuse can shut Pitt down pretty easily. And Champagne's a tough matchup, given he can flash high post, go baseline, all that. It's just, if you're doing this to Pitt, if Pitt is scoring 95 points in 33 minutes against you, it's going to be a long conference season if it keeps up like this.
Here's my biggest problem with the zone right now. It's that all of these teams have found ways around it. And there's a number of reasons why. It's getting it out in transition. We saw Pitt do that a lot in this game. Get out in transition and try to make sure that Syracuse never had a chance to even set up the zone. 18 fast break points in this game. It is the fast ball movement, where everything just gets so jumbled with the zone. You've got five guys running around with their heads cut off trying to play defense. That's another problem I see with this zone. And then on top of that, I mean, you've got guys who... I mean, the shooting in this day and age is just better. It just is. There are guys who are making shots that maybe 5-7 years ago were not going to make these open to open-ish threes. It's just the way that basketball is being played now and being practiced at the younger age. I mean, you can thank or hate Steph Curry for that, Trae Young, all those names, but that's the reason why. People want to be like that, and especially for some of these guys at Pitt, where, okay, a school like Pitt doesn't have a great track record of getting guys to the NBA lately, but they realize that, okay, there might be a way for me to get into the league if I can shoot the basketball. And that's the problem right now, is there's too many of those guys that are littered across NCAA rosters right now. And Syracuse is going to have to find a way to combat that right now. And then on top of that, there are guys that are just legit driving around guys at the top of the zone. And if that's the case, you cannot be playing zone if you are just getting driven by. Yeah. I mean, how many times did we see Xavier Johnson or Audis Tony just put the ball on the deck and get by a couple guys? That can't happen. Like, at that point, you have to cut ties with the zone. And I'm not saying that Syracuse has to stop playing the zone. I'm just saying, you may need to mix in some man-to-man. A little bit. A splash of it. And I know there's going to be the people that go out there and christen me for this, but you have to adapt to the times. You have to. And you need guys in each other's jerseys at certain points in these games, because you can say all you want about, oh, well, Joe Girard's not a great defender, and Buddy Boeheim can't do it. Listen, Joe Girard was recruited by Duke, was recruited by Michigan, was recruited by a number of high-profile schools aside from Syracuse. If he went to those schools, he was playing man-to-man. So don't tell me he can't play man-to-man defense.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because I was basically just about to say the exact same point. And you know me, I'm a zone defender, if anything. Like, usually, I've been on podcasts like this before, And I've attacked people for making that same point that I'm now sort of going to make. I'm with you. You don't have to go all the way to man-to-man, but at a certain point...
I would even say 80-20 split.
Yeah, like it can't get worse, right?
I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say there should be a finite number. You have to just pay attention to the game flow. Pay attention to the game flow and see how things are going. If that zone's getting torched, if people are getting open shots left and right, switch it up for a couple possessions. See what happens.
Yeah.
Can't get worse.
And the concerning thing is, I'm not saying this is the entire reason, but you look over at Washington, what are they now, 1-11 with this 2-3 zone? Like, not a lot of teams are doing zone. I know at the NBA level there's been more zone, but let's talk college. The number of zones...
But it's splashing. It's giving a different look.
Yeah,
and
right.
You'd almost be doing the inverse of that now at the college level, and I think that would throw some teams off.
Exactly. I mean... Guys like Alan Griffin just can't stick to the principles of the zone right now. And it's not just him. Like, I tweeted out some stuff from our account at @LO_Syracuse the other day, which is just sort of showing some of these flaws in the zone. And Griffin in particular, I think it's easy to pick on at times because I do feel like he has a lot of potential to get right in the zone. He's got the necessary athleticism. It just feels like he hasn't learned that you've got to stick to the principles and do less improvising and sort of floating around and that's how guys grew up playing basketball, was watch the ball and try to make, you know, smart plays by cutting inside of passing lanes and stuff. That's not how this zone works. You have to stick to the principles, and they're not doing that. And if Boeheim can't get it through these guys, what the principles are, and can't get it through for them to do it night in and night out, then sure, I'm all for throwing in man just to see what's what with the man, because it can't really get worse than 95 points in 33 minutes of game action. I just can't imagine there's anything worse. As Boeheim said, he hasn't seen it this bad in 45 years. So at some point you have to look in the mirror and say, all right, we've got 8 weeks until Selection Sunday. I know we've got some talent on this team. I know we're not shooting well, but that's got to get better a little bit. This team still has the capability on any given night to beat any team in a down ACC, given the way that they can get hot. And can
even
make
in
some
an
shots.
Up ACC,
sure,
this team would be able to beat any team on any given night.
Yeah, like this is a better team probably than some of the recent Syracuse teams that have gotten more out of that roster because they've just been better at the zone. And again, I'm usually not this guy. I usually go at people and think it's an uneducated take to come at the zone, because when you look at the history, when you look at the KenPom numbers, the defensive efficiency, Syracuse has been great. Really, in every year except for that NIT year and then last year. So now it's back-to-back years, though, and you have to wonder, okay, we've had a lot of the same guys on the court the past 2 years. It's been a decent sample size here. It's almost like looking at Girard, where he's got a career 33% three-point percentage and like 33% two-point percentage at this point. And I think it's 36, actually, from two-point for him, which... I mean, that is staggeringly low for a full body of work, 2 years or a year and a half now. And from two-point range, the guy is shooting 36%. It's you don't see two-point numbers that low, really, from starters across any level of college basketball. And we can probably get
any
into
any level
Girard
of basketball,
more.
Period.
Yeah,
I mean,
so...
Like, you'd have to go to, like, the fourth grade level to find people shooting that low.
So, I do think I'm at a point now, like, I'd be all for starting Kadari in the next game. And the only reason I say that, and I'll preface it by saying this. Kadari is not what everyone is making him out to be on Twitter. I think he's still being overhyped. I mean, it's almost like we've got Michael Carter-Williams on the bench. And like people are treating him like he's some unreal
guy. I mean, Michael
guy.
Carter-Williams, can I upgrade that to like... GMAC or Mello?
Yeah.
Like, people think this guy is like the second coming.
Well, Joe's
listen,
supposed
right.
to be GMAC, so no.
Right, exactly.
That hasn't panned out clearly, but no, it's like people are treating him like he's some unreal guy. He's not giving you much on the offensive end of the floor, and Boeheim's right, he has struggled at times, but what they need right now more than anything is defense. So I'm all for putting him in the lineup just from a defensive perspective.
Right, and his shot selection has not been great either. I mean, he knows what his limitations are. And now if he's out there and he's getting into the paint, getting a paint touch every single time, facilitating, then it makes this conversation really, really difficult to have.
Quick break to tell you guys about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the marketplace. My personal favorite. I actually just got a brand new loaded box of Built Bar in the mail yesterday. I'm so jacked up. That's literally like... in this quarantine time. It's one of the things that makes me the happiest when that Built Bar box comes to my door. It's that good. They've got 18 amazing flavors. We've talked about a lot of the new ones, but the six new ones are caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Man, the apple almond crisp I got in my new customizable box, which I'm very excited to try. I've not tried that one, but a lot of these sound really, really good, and they are really good. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew, and they're good for you. That's the best part. They're low calorie, low sugar, yet high protein and high fiber. Great for a keto diet as well. So you can go to BuiltBar.com. You can use our promo code LOCKEDON. That's all one word. It gets you 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Again, our promo code locked off for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
I don't really care who starts. Sure. I care more about who finishes the games. And I think there are ways that both of these guys can be utilized effectively. I mean, just look at this game in particular. There was a clear minute split. Joe had 22, Kadari had 18. And I'm just saying, when I look at defensively, yes, Kadari brings a lot more to this team. But if he was out there for 18 minutes and this team still was that bad defensively, that kind of concerns me a little bit. Now, maybe it's not all him, but I don't think we can say it's all Joe either. I think this is one of those things where Boeheim goes out in the press conference and says, I've never seen it this bad in 45 years. Well, guess what? That's on you, because what is coaching? Coaching is if something is not working,
exactly,
you have to figure it out. It is your job to figure it out and find a way to put your guys in the best position to succeed. That's what coaching is. And if Joe's not, or if Jim's not doing that, then this is on him. The collapses can be on him if he is diagnosing that as the problem. So he's got to look himself in the mirror and say, all right, if this isn't working, I have to put together a game plan that tailors to my guys' strengths. And if that strength is not playing a 2-3 zone, then you have to change your game plan. If that strength is not shooting a ton of threes, then you have to tailor to that game plan. If you know that your guys are going to be a little slow getting back on defense, well, maybe don't crash the offensive glass. And again, some of those things that I just mentioned there are not things particularly that Syracuse does, but that's part of what coaching is. You have to find the problem, you have to diagnose it, and you have to find a solution. And if you're not doing any of that, then you shouldn't be coaching.
Yeah, you can never say we don't have answers. You're literally paid to give us answers. That's your job as a coach. Make adjustments and get the best out of your team. And I don't think he meant it maybe as literally as he said it, but still, just don't say it. Don't ever say those words. Like, it just doesn't give the right message. And regardless of how you're feeling after a tough loss like that, that just never should come out of your mouth or even get to that point. But I do want to bring up Juan Paul Ramirez gave us a good comment on Twitter that kind of summarizes just how I'm feeling about this whole thing. I'll just read it real quick. He said, we can complain about Joe or Buddy's shooting or how Kadari seems better, even though the numbers don't show that. But the fact is, this team gave up 95 points in 33 minutes, like I said. No hustle to loose balls, no interest in boxing out, and only a desire to block shots but not play. It goes back to really the theme of this podcast, which is, yes, they went 0 for 11 and they struggled, but it's the defense that's the issue.
Blocking shots is the laziest form of defense there is. Like everyone might think that Pau Gasol is some great all-time defender. No, he just blocked a lot of shots. He wasn't some great defender. And that's the problem right now is you got guys like Allen who are too consumed with, all right, I'm going to get beat a little bit, or I'm going to play off, I'm going to gamble. And gambling defense doesn't work. It does not work at this level. You can't get away with that and just expect to go out there and pin some guy's shot on the glass every single time. That's the problem with this team right now. And the loose balls thing, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, there is no one that has any interest on this team in diving for a loose ball aside from Marek right now. Absolutely none. I remember there's a couple plays. There's one where I think Griffin turned it over, and then on the outlet pass, he kind of tipped it in the air. Ball is in the air for a little bit, and it gets loose. Everyone's kind of around it, and everyone kind of wants to poke at it a little bit. No one actually wants to go make the play. There's another where it goes all the way into the backcourt for Syracuse off of a missed pass, and there's a chance. I think it was Buddy had a chance to dive on it. He had no interest in it. Allen had another chance to dive on it. He had no interest in doing that. So it's just the hustle and all that stuff. And it really angers you as a fan, because those are the plays that if you're going to be as bad as you are defensively, you have to get yourself as many possessions as possible. And that means making the hustle plays on offense to extend your time of possession on that side of the floor.
Yeah, and as much as the defense is the main issue, like we definitely have that spot on, there are a couple things I do want to bring up on the offense. And just in general, like, where is Buddy Boeheim's shot gone? It's getting to a point now. I think that he'll break out of it at some point. Like, there's reason for optimism when you look at the Syracuse numbers, because the three-point shooting just doesn't really line up, and we have people tweeting at us, which is true. Like, I thought Buddy was the best shooter in the country, or I thought this team was supposed to be nailing threes, and you look at the splits in this game, Pittsburgh is the team that is hitting threes at will, and Pittsburgh's not the team that was supposed to be any good from deep in this game. But yeah, they're going to have to make shots to win games, and part of the issue is when the pressure gets tough. We've seen this at the NBA level when the Houston Rockets have struggled in Game 7, where their shooting just disappeared. If you're very reliant on jump shooting is pressure-based. Like, that's where you can get exposed. That's where touch really becomes a factor, where if you're getting looks around the rim, almost everyone can just make shots around the rim, but you can go ice cold when you're shooting jump shots and you're relying on that. And when the pressure ratchets up, I do feel like this offense is a little more vulnerable because they're just not making shots right now. Like, every time Joe shoots the ball, you can just tell he's almost wishing for it to go in, because he knows what his numbers are and he knows what people are saying about him. And how could you not? But it's getting to a point where, again, like we've said 1,000 times, they've just got to try and get more inside. And I do think they made a better effort in this game of getting it to Quincy and Marek, but they got to keep doing that.
I got to say, yeah, I mean, whenever Marek touches the ball, good things happen.
Right.
That's the one thing I've gleaned from this offense, is that he needs to touch the ball in every possession, I think. It's to that point now where he's either going to make a facilitation for you, or he's going to get a touch in the paint that'll open someone up on the arc. And that I think needs to be one of the priorities of this offense. It's gotten problematic right now. And to your point with Joe and Buddy and the shots, it's not like they're getting different shots than what they were getting a year ago, or in Buddy's case, 2 years ago. They are getting these same exact shots. If anything, I think they might be getting more open shots because teams are kind of cued in on their struggles and they're not as afraid of them as they once were. And they're just not going in now. So that's the thing. It feels like, I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what, but there's a problem there, because they are getting these same exact looks. And kind of like you said, it's more of a prayer as opposed to a shot that they're shooting with confidence right now.
The good news is the offense will get better. And they'll be not...
It will. And, like, this isn't a terrible offensive game. I mean, you scored 76 points, and your three-point shooting was abysmal. 3 of 23, 13%. It's just that now we're seeing these 13% clunkers start to add up a little bit. We've seen it a couple times now. And I know we thought that BC was probably going to be closer to the norm than the outlier, but it's... There isn't a level of consistency. You're never seeing a game out of this team where they're shooting like 35% from three. And we're getting a true feel of what this team is as a three-point shooting team. We just don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's at the point in the season where it's like, turn off the TV, don't even watch them, they're going to the NIT. If you had to bet right now, like, NIT would be the bet that I would take, just because they've dug themselves such a hole here, and there's not a ton of quad one wins, to be frank, and we don't know how many games will be canceled and how many games will be played on schedule. That's the other variable that makes it sort of tougher to sort of dig out of this hole that they've dug themselves here. But it's Syracuse, and they've done this a lot. As I said, they've been 1-3 in recent years, and we've counted them out at times, and then they've won on the road at Duke or done stuff that has vaulted them back into the bubble conversation. Even last year, they tried to make an effort at doing that when they went on their little 5-game winning streak and beat Virginia. And for a little bit, we were talking about the NCAA tournament on this podcast. So it'd be premature to rule this team out, given that we know there's talent, we know they can score, and the offense will get better. But the defense is the biggest thing, as it has been all year. And I do feel like this year is a little bit different, because you don't have any wins of signature variety at this point. and you look at the schedule, and it's just a little more up in the air and unknown as to when those wins and those chances are coming. And it feels like there's less games that they'll end up playing total. So the margin for error of missing out on a UNC win on the road that could have been a big win, or a Rutgers win on the road, is just getting slimmer and slimmer as the days pass.
It's frustrating. And again, you can't control any of that stuff, but you have to take advantage of the opportunities when the door opens a little bit. And it's opened quite a few times for them. One last thing, and then we can get out of here. But the biggest frustration for me with this team right now, I don't want to see them waste this Quincy Guerrier season.
Good point.
I mean, what he is doing is truly special. And it is one of the better seasons we have seen out of a Syracuse player in the last 5-10 years. He is playing at that level. I mean, it feels like it's an anomaly if he's not getting a double-double. He's a menace on the boards. He's great in the paint. I think he does shoot a few too many threes now, but that's something that is easily fixable. I mean, anytime he's got the ball down low, I don't care if there's two guys on him, three guys on him, I feel confident that he is going to come away with 2 points. He may not get it on the initial layup attempt, but he's going to get his own rebound and tip it in. I mean, we saw him do that a couple times, but I would hate to be wasting this kind of Quincy season, because if you told me that he was going to be Mr. Double-Double for this team every single night,
I
would have thought, okay, this is a team that's contending to win the ACC right now, because I thought that, oh, Buddy's going to be fantastic, and Joe Girard is going to continue where he was from a season ago, and you're bringing in Alan Griffin, and you've got a veteran front court with Marek and with Barama. Like, that's the special stuff that you could have had right now, but you just can't waste what Quincy Guerrier is doing. You just can't. I mean, what he is putting on right now is truly special. And I feel like, and we know we're a victim of this too. We don't talk about it enough.
Yeah.
How special he's been, because there have been some absolute dog crap other components of this team.
Right. And real quick story before we get out of here. It just came to the top of my mind. I was thinking about this during the game. I may have shared this at some point on the podcast, but anyway, I'm going to go into it again. There was a moment last year, the Barclays tournament, where I went to the game with my sister's boyfriend. And the reason why this is relevant is because he's not a college basketball fan. He's never really watched Syracuse. He doesn't know a ton about the program outside of what you would know, that they play zone and it's Jim Boeheim and
question,
that type of stuff.
Question, real quick question. How stupid did he think the standing clap was?
Oh, he hated it. That's a whole other topic. That was his first thing, because these were the games in Barclays where it took him like 5 minutes to get done with the standing clap.
Boy.
So I don't know if I ever told you this, but that was a huge takeaway, that he was like, this standing clap thing needs to go, because they were still doing it even though it was a neutral site game. But the other thing he said to me, and it's ringing true now, just picture this, because this is a guy, he's a diehard Knicks fan. He knows basketball, but he just has no interest in college.
He's a Knicks fan and knows basketball?
Well, yeah, that's
like
a whole other
that
topic.
Sounds like an oxymoron right there.
Right. Hopefully we don't have too many of those listening right now. But anyway, he's looking at the game and he just turns to me and was like, this number 11, Girard, he's terrible. He was like, he's just chucking up shots. Like, who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Like, is he the coach's son? And I was like, no, actually, we do have the coach's
35.
Son on the team. And it just was interesting to get his take from like a blank canvas perspective, because another thing he brought up was they need to get the ball to Guerrier more. And I'm not saying he's like some whisperer. Like, it doesn't take being a rocket scientist to know this stuff. But I do think we look at Girard and we get in our head that the accolades and what he came in with, and he's New York State's all-time leading scorer. When you really just watch him, this is getting to a point where Boeheim's got to make a change here, and maybe we were a little late to that. But anyway, I just thought it was funny because that take is looking better and better from my sister's boyfriend.
Wow.
So.
Get him on staff. Get him on the staff. Get, like, I don't know, what should he, like, director of basketball operations? Or maybe he takes the spot when Boeheim leaves and an assistant job opens up. Maybe that's where we're going to slide.
Yeah, and so, now we've really got on this podcast, because I just spilled a large bottle of water all over my laptop. So we'll talk more about Syracuse tomorrow, but we got to wrap it for sure now.
Oh, boy. So nightmare finish for Syracuse basketball, nightmare finish for Tim's laptop as we close this out. Hopefully it's not up in flames right now, but we'll get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to preview all things Miami. So get you ready for hopefully a chance to get a a solid win here because Miami has been playing some pretty good basketball. So we'll break down Syracuse and Miami on tomorrow's show. For Tim, I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.